From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 29th day of June 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And then later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, sign up for the new acre program is a huge bust, at least so far. The numbers, as you'll hear, are staggeringly low. And the U.S. House of Representatives has passed a landmark climate change bill. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour. And then we'll hear about a five-step program for glyphosate resistance. Hey, and don't forget that in 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy. They'll help us discuss the global agricultural weather forecast right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Mark Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby July wheat, 5 3/4 lower at 528.5. September at 557 3/4, down 5 1/4. In December, wheat futures for the soft red settled 583, down 4 1/4. July in Kansas City for the hard red, 8 cents lower at 581.5. Back in Chicago, the corn pit was lower for the day. Nearby July, 377, down 7 1/4. September, 384.5, down 7 1/4. And December futures at 397 1/4, 7 cents lower. March contract 409.5, down 6.5. And the May corn futures at $4.18, down 6.5 cents. July soybean futures gained 14 cents today to settle at $12.15. And that was the end of the green in the bean pit. The August futures were down 6 cents at $11.22. September at 10.36, 10 cents lower. And November soybeans at $9.83.5. A settlement price down 7.5 cents. January futures 986.5, down 5.5, and the March soybeans at 979.5, down 7 cents. July bean meal 640 higher at 411.40. July soybean oil at 35.78, down 30 cents. June live cattle futures 84.62.5, up $2.15 today. The August at 85.40, up $3. August feeders 275 higher at 101.72.5, and the July lean hog futures at $58.25, up $1.32.5. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby July, August, crude oil futures settled today at $71.49 a barrel. That's up $2.33. The September at $72.38, up $2.36. July ethanol, $1.69.3, 1.5 cents higher. August natural gas at $3.93.7, now 16.8 cents lower. July RBOB gasoline trading at $1.93.5. Last tick up 6.1 cents. And the heating oil futures, $1.78.4, up 5.3. July propane futures just about unchanged on today at 82.1 cents. And the gold futures at $940.40 an ounce, down 30 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 85.11 is up 73 points, and the U.S. dollar trading 79.83 is down 0.04. The CRB index for the day at 254.31 is up 3 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like, as prepared by our own Daniel Pounder. He says tonight, increasing cloudiness everywhere, cooling. Lows this evening will range from 54 in northern Indiana to 62 in southwestern Illinois. Wow, what a difference a week makes. Tomorrow in the north, mostly cloudy, in central sections partly sunny. In the south, mostly sunny. Highs will range tomorrow from 65 in northern Indiana to 85 in the southern parts of Illinois. And the extended forecast says precip not expected until next weekend, and it will stay mostly in the southern regions. Even with a lack of precipitation for several days, the cooler temperatures and lower humidity levels will slow down the drying of the soils. More on the agricultural weather forecast at the bottom of the hour when we talk with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Quick pause here before we talk with Pete Manhart. Kurt Kimmel is away. They're both from Bates Commodities, but I do want to discuss something with you very quickly. We're at the end of the year for fundraising for this publicly funded program, Closing Market Report. About 30% of the money that comes in to operate our budgets comes from you, the listeners. If you haven't ever given before, please take time now and visit our willag.org website and find the pledge buttons up on the right-hand side of the page and make a pledge to willag.org in the Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report. If you'd like to make a phone call, the number is 217-244-9455. We operate on a budget that has all the money in the bank by June 30th. So if it's not there, it won't be used in the coming fiscal year. And we're about $120,000 short at this time. If you can help out, dial the number 217-244-9455 and make a contribution. Of course, it is tax deductible. On the line with us now to talk about the agricultural markets is Pete Manhart. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Thank you, Pete, for filling in for Kurt this afternoon.
Well, thanks, Todd.
I appreciate you taking the time. You know, tomorrow's big day. We've been waiting for it for a while. The big August acreage report and the quarterly grain stocks reports are out. What's the number you're going to be watching with most interest?
Well, I think we're going to be looking at what the corn acreage number says. We've been talking about it so long. If it comes in about as expected, I don't know if it'll mean anything. And then we're going to also look at what the bean acreage number is to see if we actually did plant a lot more beans and less corn. That's number one. And then after that, we'll look at usage to see if we really did use more beans than they had us using, and thus cutting carry out for old crop. And then though something they've been talking about the last few days is with the cattle numbers, hog numbers, and chicken numbers down, will the usage be lower and thus the carry out higher on corn?
Did you expect the market to be as active as it was today? Futures were off a whole lot in the corn pit.
Yeah, we were. I did not expect it to be that far, but I mean, for the last 2 weeks as we were going down, there were people talking about the 390 area to 395 area, and we got to 395 and a half today in that December. But no, we didn't expect to be down seven today at the end, and that was two off the low.
I suppose it doesn't make too much difference at this point. We still just have to wait and see what the numbers look like tomorrow and then divine whether a 7-cent loss today was any big deal on the technical charts or not, don't we?
Yeah, I don't think it was any big deal today. I think it was thin market, number one. Two, we've been talking about it forever, and a lot of people just getting out of longs, they still had profit from what they bought a month, 2 and 3 months ago, because we were up 7 weeks straight, and now this is, what, the second week down or a little past the second week down. So, I mean, people are still unknown on what we're going to have for a crop. A lot of industry thinks, well, we'll just have a great one like we did last year.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen the weather yet. If we have hot weather, if we have dry weather, the western corn belt burns up quicker than we do, but they've got a great crop going. The eastern corn belt is a mix of everything from very poor to good, but there's nothing excellent out there. And if we would have really bad weather here, it's like our friend there at U of I said, we need the best of everything to have a really good crop this year. And the market right now thinks we're going to have that good crop in both corn and beans.
I guess we'll know more about that this afternoon when the crop progress reports are released in just about 45 minutes or so.
And people do think those will be worse from the heat last week. I mean, corn was curling in an awful lot of areas last week.
Tell me, what are producers telling you about the crops in their fields now? Are they feeling better about it? And I'm talking about the central Illinois producer. The southern Illinois producers, those that were really rain-delayed.
The southern Illinois producer is sick because they still don't have the crop planted, and what is planted is looking poorly. Here, the crop looks better. You can't see the holes as much. You can't see the raggedness as much because it has grown a lot due to last week's heat, but it's still behind a lot.
And what's your best set of advice for producers who've got maybe old crop corn yet in the bin?
I would look at the report tomorrow, and if it's positive, hang on. If it's not, I would be dumping it. Or if they don't want to sell it, be buying puts.
And we'll talk about new crop, I suppose, after we get the report out tomorrow, won't we?
Right, we will. And there's not much left in the way of beans out there, but people that do have them, old crop beans are in very tight supply due to South American crop being poorer than expected. So those, they're paying premium for those in a lot of places.
Okay, thanks much.
Thank you.
That's Pete Manhart. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, filling in for Kurt Kimmel. Somebody from that office always joins us right here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Monday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
Hey, if you're a fan of the agricultural programming that you get from Illinois Public Media, you can get it in several ways. You know a couple of them. willag.org, that's willag.org. That's just one of them. You can go online and listen to all of our ag programming in its entirety right there on the website at willag.org. Of course, you can listen to us on radio stations all across the state. And if you can't get either of those, dial 217-333-3434, and we update that phone number with some numbers and a little analysis at 10:15 and 3:15 daily. We call it our mobile analyst portal. One other number, if you like all of it, you might help us out and give us a little financial contribution as well. We are funded to the tune of about 30-40% by you, the listener. The number to call is 217-244-9455. Just tell them you're supporting ag at Illinois Public Media, 217-244-9455. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take us through the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, USDA says only 946 farmers out of the 1.3 million who participate in Agriculture Department crop commodity programs have signed up for the new average crop revenue election program known as ACRE. Under ACRE, farmers would receive payments based on rolling market season average prices and state crop yields rather than government-determined target prices and loan rates. But they have to give up 20% of their direct payments and see a 30% reduction in marketing loan rates and get payments at a later date. USDA has extended the sign-up period for ACRE until August 14th and is attempting to teach producers more about the program. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a landmark climate change bill early Friday evening by a narrow 219 to 212 vote, with eight Republicans joining Democrats to pass the measure. The climate legislation includes the creation of a carbon offset program for farmers and ranchers that would be run by USDA. Further, agriculture is exempted from the greenhouse gas emission requirements. Another key provision would effectively shelve the Environmental Protection Agency proposed rule that factors in land use changes overseas when calculating the carbon reduction of biofuels. National Farmers Union President Roger Johnson says the bill, quote, recognizes the unique role of America's family farmers and ranchers can play when it comes to combating global climate change. But House Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Frank Lucas called the vote, quote, a disgrace to the American people. Lucas said the bill does nothing for rural America and will cost jobs. The bill now goes to the Senate for consideration. The island nation of Taiwan may be on the verge of dropping restrictions on imports of U.S. beef that were imposed following the discovery of mad cow disease in the U.S. back in June of 2005. Taiwan does accept U.S. boneless beef from animals under 30 months of age. Taiwan imports around 73,000 tons of beef a year, with the U.S. supplying roughly one-third of that. The head of China's central bank today says the country's economy is on the mend, and he expressed confidence that a government target of 8% growth this year will be met. Beijing has sought to insulate China from the global recession with a $586 billion stimulus plan that calls for higher spending on construction of highways and other public works. China's economic growth slowed to 6.1% in the first quarter, the weakest since quarterly records began in 1992. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Both of those programs you can hear anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. If you can't hear them on the radio, hit the website. If you can't get to the website, dial this number, 217-333-3434. We update it with some numbers just after the opening and the close each day, and a bit of analysis from our radio programs. We call it our mobile analyst portal. It's 217-333-3434. Now up next, you know, the University of Illinois has a glyphosate-resistant weed management program. I'll have a report on how to manage glyphosate-resistant weeds. Many weeds are now resistant to glyphosate. It's a herbicide commonly referred to by one of its trade names, Roundup. For farmers in the Midwest, a couple of glyphosate-resistant weeds, water hemp and giant ragweed, are likely to cause problems during the growing season, says University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager. Populations of glyphosate-resistant giant ragweed have developed in whole counties in the eastern Corn Belt. Farmers in parts of Ohio and Indiana have already been battling this problem. Illinois farmers have been luckier so far, but the tides are turning.
It will spread very rapidly. Unfortunately, we really can't predict how quickly it will spread because there are certain biological factors as well as abiotic factors that will influence how quickly this spreads. The safest assumption is that with repeated use of the same active ingredient, eventually we do get to that point of resistance. And then how quickly from, say, an epicenter event will that radiate out from that point?
The question then is not really if a field will have a glyphosate-resistant weed, but how to manage that weed when it arrives.
We've reached a point where there will be some fields that we suspect we will find where there may not be any viable post-emergence options for water hemp control after it's come up in the soybeans. So we'll have to look in those scenarios at going back to extensive soil residual type of products that can give us some extended control. And the possibility does exist that some of these fields may have to be planted in wider row soybean to facilitate row cultivation.
The Illinois recommendation for dealing with an area where a glyphosate-resistant weed might occur is a five-step program. Use a full rate of a soil residual herbicide. Spray glyphosate post-emergence for the first time when water hemp is 3 to 5 inches tall. Scout that field 7 days later. If the water hemp control is not adequate, consider applying a PPO-inhibiting herbicide. Scout the field again 10 to 14 days after applying the PPO. And if the water hemp is still alive, get a hoe out of the shed. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. I'm Todd Gleason, and on the line with us from the Andersons this afternoon, right here in Champaign County, is Greg Johnson to talk about the agricultural cash grain markets. Good afternoon to you, Greg. How are you today?
Doing good, Todd. How about yourself?
Oh, you know, it's a lot better today than it was last Monday, that's for sure. Man, well, with the exception that we're still down in the corn market. I find that hard to believe, I guess, on the day before a report, at least so sharply lower in that nearby contract, and even the December futures for that matter. Did the cash market follow the futures lower?
No, the cash market continues to be extremely strong. I think last week, I was just looking from Monday to Monday, Corn gained 3 cents, beans gained 3 cents, wheat gained about 20 cents last week. This week, corn is up another 4 cents from a week ago, basis-wise at the Gulf. Beans and wheat are both up a nickel from where they were a week ago. So we've had some very strong basis rallies here in the last 3 to 4 weeks.
Now, how unusual is it for the futures market to disregard so much what's happening in the cash market?
Well, when you have as many speculators and funds in the market as what we've had, I think that is entirely logical to see that the futures markets are going down. But the processors, exporters, feeders still need to get that cash supply. So just similar to last year when the futures were going up for no apparent reason because of the speculators, I think right now we're seeing the markets go down because of the speculators, but that's not reflected in the cash market at all.
Okay, so let's talk about what you think is in the bin at this point and on old crop for corn and how long we might be able to sustain a close in the cash basis price for corn futures because of the number of bushels that are still out there.
Well, we've got 3 months left in the marketing year, so that's 25%. And I think that's about what we have left on farm. So there is old crop corn out there that needs to move, but the question is when. I think most people, if they've held on to it this long, they're going to wait and see what the acreage report system are. They're going to wait and see how the crop progresses through pollination before we really see much movement. So base levels could stay rather strong for another 3 to 4 weeks, but then once the pollination weather starts to get figured out, then we could see farmers start to move that corn.
Yeah, they'd start to move that corn, and then it would fall apart pretty good. But that would be a normal seasonal tendency, wouldn't it?
Correct, yes, yeah.
Yeah. So how about on the soybean side?
There's so few left that I think any kind of demand at all, whether it be speculative demand or real demand, could push old crop beans a lot higher. So there's two different markets in beans. You've got the July and August contract that the sky is the limit on that, whereas November beans are more reflective of what really could be out there in 4 or 5 months. And so there's, you know, I would say limited upside in the new crop November beans.
So the quarterly grain stocks numbers for both, actually for beans in particular, will be pretty important tomorrow morning, won't they?
Exactly. If they get that quarterly stock down another 20, 25 million bushels, we could see some fireworks in old crop beans.
You know, then put this into perspective for me, because I think producers will watch the old crop jump fast, think they're going to get some of that for the new crop, but there's always not only their crop, but 6 months later, the South American crop will come on too, right? And so you have to be careful about how far you were able to push that friendly marketplace into the new crop year.
You're right. You have to treat the two commodities, old crop beans and new crop beans, as two completely separate. Just because old crop beans go up does not mean you're going to get riding the coattails effect in the new crop beans. In 2004, the last time we had a bean carryout this tight, that old crop, new crop bean spread went to $3 a bushel, which means that old crop beans could go up another dollar from where they are today, and the new crop beans wouldn't have to go up at all.
And what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn finishes at 384, new crop 379, cash beans 1220, new crop 963, and cash wheat is 458.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He's with the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Joins us on the Closing Mark Report on a Monday afternoon. In just 2 minutes, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. They're based up there on the 23rd floor of the Boeing building in downtown. A great view from the top of the skyscraper.
It's National Almond Butter Crunch Day. It's also Feast Day of St. Peter, patron saint of fishermen, bakers, and harvesters. On this day in agricultural history in 1943, General Dwight D. Eisenhower requested that Coca-Cola provide 10 portable bottling plants for U.S. troops overseas. Eisenhower's telegram requested 3 million bottles of Coca-Cola, complete equipment for bottling, washing, and capping 3 million bottles twice a month, and sufficient syrup and caps for 6 million refills. In 1956, now President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed the Interstate Highway Act, which made possible the modern interstate highway system in the U.S. The act committed federal funds to the states for 90% of interstate highway construction. By the way, three states, Missouri, Kansas, and Pennsylvania, lay claim to the first to take advantage of the act. In 2004, Roy Wofford died. An American pathologist, he pioneered and wrote books on the idea of restricting food intake to extend lifespan. And in 2005, the USDA confirmed the second domestic case of mad cow disease in the U.S. The 12-year-old cow was born in Texas and spent its whole life on the same ranch. The first case, discovered in December of 2003, was in a dairy cow that had been imported from Canada. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. The folks up at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, are on the line with us. Josh Starr is there. Good afternoon to you, Josh.
Hey, Todd. How's it going?
Oh, it's a beautiful day here, and I bet you have a beautiful bright blue sky and can see a long ways from your vantage point today.
Yeah, we can. It's a very nice day out there, and we deserve it here after what we've trudged through the past couple weeks. Really, the pattern of coming across the Midwest is rather tranquil for the next couple days. We do have some cooler air making its way into the belt over the next couple days. Nothing highly unseasonably cool, but you're going to bring in lower dew points and in pretty fair conditions for the bulk of this week as low pressure actually cranks up across southeastern Canada. And really the next widespread opportunity for rain doesn't look like until late over the holiday weekend upcoming. So looks like we get the fireworks off on the 4th across the region in good shape, and then maybe you bring some rain in for Sunday of the upcoming holiday weekend. But across the Midwest, you know, pretty adequate growing conditions upcoming for the next week.
Tell me about, as you talked about last week with your compadres up there, how difficult that was last week, how unusual it was, if at all unusual, to have that many days in a row that are that hot, that humid in this area.
Yeah, it was a rather unusual occurrence. Usually you would get that type of weather here more in July and August than you would in June. And essentially what happened is we've had this southern-based ridge that's really been positioned for the month of June across Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana. And what happened is you fed some of that air and the humidity it taps in from the Gulf of Mexico northward into Iowa and Illinois. It was a 3 to 4 day event, but certainly for June that is a little bit unusual, as that southern-based ridge will tend to come north during the bulk of the summer. But June, you don't get that many consecutive days. You usually get a front to come through to clear things out rather than the longevity we had last week. So that's usually more of a July and August feature than June. But we had those couple days here, and now we're back into a more seasonal pattern here. It looks like bulk next 10 days.
Yeah, and so it's unlikely. This isn't something we would call persistent, so it's not likely to return very quickly then?
Yeah, that's right, Todd. It's really more of just an anomalous couple of days rather than a pattern change that is telegraphing potentially more hot, humid days upcoming through at least the first half of July. It looks like that ridge stays a southern U.S. feature, and it bounces between the Mississippi River to the east and then out to the Rockies in the west. So rather stable feature down south, and we don't see a return to that hot, humid 3-4 days here, at least through through July 15th.
How does it impact hard red winter wheat crop?
Well, the interesting thing about the hard red crop is to the north of this southern-based ridge, you are going to fire showers up and thunderstorms starting later this week through the weekend and early next week. So as the harvests move north across the plains, you get into Kansas, you get into Nebraska, and conditions are not going to be that ideal for harvesting, given that they'll get in a more active precip regime with daily thunderstorm development here late this weekend, early next week.
And a 30-second update of the Chinese growing conditions, please.
China looks in really good shape here. They had a little bit of heat last week. We don't think it was enough heat to trim any yields here in the summer crop region. Turning to more seasonable and more precip on the way this week, so China's looking in pretty good shape.
Thanks much, Josh.
All right, thanks, Todd.
You too. Josh Starr is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. He joined us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Monday afternoon. Remember, if you get the opportunity to dial this number and contribute financially, because we are supported in part by you, please do. The number is 217-244-9455. That's 244-9455. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.